A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Just quickly, before we start today's episode, I have some news for our Australian listeners, because we can finally reveal all the details of our upcoming tour, Behind the Glass Live, Down Under. We're going to be doing these four huge events, and right now I'm going to tell you where they're happening, when they're happening, and how you can attend. All four events are going to follow a kind of similar format. Essentially, they'll kick off with these huge open doors, cars and coffee style meet and greets. We want as many of you to turn up as possible, whether you're arriving in a car, by foot, on a motorbike, in a coach, we don't really care, just come hang out and say hi. Then a smaller, more intimate crowd will move inside each of the venues for the traditional seated podcast recordings. Now, the podcast recordings are ticketed, and tickets are limited depending on the venue size. So yeah, not everyone will be able to join us inside for the podcast recording, but if you don't, hopefully you can still hang out and say hi to us during the cars and coffee meets beforehand. So we are kicking things off on Saturday the 4th of November at the Young Timers Garage in Melbourne. We can't wait for this to be our initial event. YTG meets BTG meets STG. It's going to be amazing. Things will start around 8 a.m. with the podcast recording a little bit later in the morning, probably around 10-ish. The next day, Sunday, 5th of November, we'll be in Gold Coast at the awesome Next Level Performance. Things will start there around 10 a.m, so a little bit later in the morning. Then on Wednesday, the 8th of November, we'll be in Sydney at Stash, the incredible storage facility, for our first ever evening Behind the Glass Live event. So rather than cars and coffee, probably be cars and non-alcoholic beers. But yeah, things will start around 7 p.m. with the podcast recording starting around 8:30, 8:45. Hopefully that allows enough time for those of you working in Central Sydney to get out to Stash. And then finally, on Saturday the 11th of November, we'll be in Perth at Auto King, Western Australia, for another morning event. Now, if you do want to get tickets for the podcast recordings and submit your cars to be rated by Tony, good luck. You can head over to seenthroughglass.online and go to the events section. The tickets are going incredibly fast, so you should really get a move on. You'll see when you go to the events section, you can also get a free cars and coffee ticket. You don't need that ticket, it just helps us estimate numbers so we can let the venues know how many people might be turning up. But tickets for the seated podcast recording are essential, so grab them now whilst you can. Anyway, we'll leave it there for now. Plenty more information to come, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead. Once again, seenthroughglass.online, head to the events section. For now, let's crack on with this week's episode.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Hello everyone, welcome to the latest episode of Behind the Glass. It's an exciting day here in the studio, but also a nerve-wracking one because we have new technical equipment.
Yeah.
And I haven't given myself much time to get used to it before we've launched into a recording session.
We spent the last 15 minutes saying hello into the mic.
Yeah. Hello, hello, check, one, two. We're still not happy.
No.
But I think what you're hearing is fine. I think we're not enjoying the feedback in our cans
as much.
You know, that's a very, I'm going to call that an industry expression or phrase, the cans. That's what we've got in our head, Tony. Cans.
They are cans, yeah. And in previous years, me especially, I wouldn't really pick up on all this crap, but I do now.
Yeah, now you're
as
very aware
I understand it all now.
Well, the thing that we don't have active right now, which is what's stressing me, is our compressor. This is getting very technical.
No idea.
But a compressor compresses our vocals to give a nice, you know,
flatline level.
Right.
At the moment, we're a bit all over the place. So yeah, if you're listening, you're in the car, you've got your headphones on and you think at 1 minute, I'm shouting, then Tony's whispering. Then we apologise. We will figure it out. This is the Rodecaster Pro 2 and I'm very excited to have it. I literally unboxed it about 10 minutes before Tony got here.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, is that?
Yeah. I just unplugged it.
Oh, okay, fine. I'll let you off then.
Yeah, well.
You know. As long as it's recording, mate, it's all I ever care about.
It's recording, and I think I can do a bit in post, to sharpen things up. But okay. Yeah, apologies if we're all over the place. But anyway, nice to have you all with us. I wonder where, I always think this, I wonder when people are listening, because we're recording, full disclosure, on a Monday lunchtime. It's a public holiday here in the UK.
Yep.
Managed to get Tony out of bed and he's
out of bed. Joking.
What do you do on a public holiday?
Work normally.
Do you still work?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a public holiday.
No, you didn't until I told you.
Yeah, it doesn't affect me. It's a bit low, but that's because we obviously don't work. You do work traditional days and hours though, theoretically. Hours probably not. But
more so than you, yeah, for sure. As in Monday to Saturday in general. I normally try and have a Sunday off if I can. Most of the time I do have a Sunday off, actually. But yeah, a bank holiday Monday doesn't really...
Yeah, I'm only aware that it's a public holiday when I get a bounce back on people's emails.
Right. Or you're... Because sometimes you go away, right? Sometimes you will go
but
away.
Not for like a public holiday.
No, not just for a public holiday, but... This is the first bank holiday Monday we've ever recorded. Or is that just you being polite, assuming that I'm doing
something? Yeah, because you always text me saying, oh, it's a bank holiday on Monday, so I guess we aren't recording. And I'm like, no, we're not. We can do it.
Oh, but I don't mind, mate.
That's the first time I find out it's a bank holiday.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I always assume your end that you want to go and do something.
Oh, no, I assume that's what you're doing. I assume you're like, oh.
So I'm trying to be polite.
Yeah, you're trying to be polite. I'm like, I assume you mean like dealership's closed, so I've got the day off. By the way, you were just a bit hot on your laugh there, so I'm just going to bring your...
You're going to bring me back down?
Bring you back down, because that was aggressive. That laugh was right in people's heart, like...
Too much.
So let's just knock you down a few levels.
But now I don't feel I can hear myself.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Right? It won't affect you, but just be careful, because that laugh, wow, nearly...
Blow your speakers out.
Yeah, caught me off guard, let alone anyone else. Okay. You have to practice. Do you know the Beyonce technique when you get to a microphone?
No.
God, we're going very music industry heavy here.
I'm not a singer, mate.
So if you watch Beyonce when she goes live, she goes for that big note. I actually don't know any Beyonce songs, but...
Does she pull away from the microphone?
Yeah. Yeah. So you'll watch them and let's think of some other big singers. Adele.
Tom Jones.
Tom Jones.
Comes away from
the
microphone.
He goes...
Does he?
Because he's compressing himself. He's keeping that level. So your big laugh...
Come away from the
right
mic.
Into the mic.
Go out of the room.
Well, yeah, pretty much. Just lean back a little bit.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Anyway, mate, what's been going on? We've got a bit to catch up on.
We have, yeah.
We've both done trips in BMW M cars.
Oh, well, I was wondering if we were going to talk about that.
We need to launch into it.
Two
theoretically different BMW M cars, but as it turns out, maybe actually very similar.
Quite similar traits, it turns out.
So you in the M3 Touring and me in the M2. So tell me everything. Where did you go in the M3 Touring?
I ended up in Monaco, but went...
Bloody hell, all right. Lovely.
But went scenic route. So down to sort of Dijon and then up over the Alps.
Lovely.
Stayed in Chamonix.
Classic Chamonix.
Yeah.
Great stop off in the Alps.
Yeah. And then wound my way from there, no motorway, all the way into Monaco, basically.
Okay, nice. Did you do your favourite Red Rock Road?
No, that's too far east.
Yeah, too far west or too far east?
Too far west. Yeah, because I'd come down, I'd have had to go over and round.
Fair. Okay, so, but you found some nice roads to trickle down.
Yeah, I'd done the... there's a very famous road called the D902.
Sure.
Which is a very, very good road. There's some other roads off it as well that I've done before. So I know all the roads. So the roads I've all done before. So yeah, I had a mega time. There was a period we were speaking on WhatsApp. It was really quite funny, actually, because I've raved so much about the M3 Touring and how good it is and how much I like it in this country. And I thought, because normally it was going to fly. But I thought, no, do you know what? We'd take the BMW, we'll drive, and I can do some proper roads in it, not in this country, you know? Because it's always my barometer of how really good a car is when I go abroad in it and go on proper roads, you know. So it's always my benchmark, essentially. So we, after we'd come off at Dijon, we started to go on the twisty bits, and the M3 was just in its normal mode. No
Sport Plus?
No, just like normal.
Bang normal.
Because okay. I'd been on the motorway,
sure,
obviously.
Sure.
As a cruising car, it's bang on what you'd expect. It's nice and soft and all as it should be. So, because in general, like when I'm in the Ferrari or the Porsche, they don't need as setting up. You just turn a button on the Manettino on the Ferrari, just put it in race or turn the traction off. And in Porsche, you barely do nothing. You like literally just hit one button because it's already like ready, basically. So the BMW, I just thought, well, it'll be all right. I'm not going to go that fast. I've got my girlfriend in the car. Like, I'll just have a little play. Let's see. Anyway, I start firing into these out corners and it was terrible. And I thought, oh my God, this car's not very good. I'm fuming. Like, I've said such good things about it. I'm really disappointed. And I messaged you. And you can tell your story in a minute, what you said. It's quite funny. And then once we got to the whole turn, so I managed it for about 15 minutes. Was only
well, Hans, let me stop because you're getting carried away. What wasn't very good about it? Why did you go?
Everything.
No, but come on, you're a motoring journalist now, Tony. What was not good? What did you not enjoy? Because how could you have, till this point, been having such a good time and liked the car in this country so much, suddenly you're on a twisty out road? What are you discovering that feels crap?
Okay, so my real first thing that I picked up on was the interference of the traction control. It was like horrendous, like really bad. The front was too heavy, the steering wasn't great, brakes and was no different really. Suspension was
have
too...
Have you got the ceramics on you?
No, just normal brakes. The brakes weren't affected. It was rolling around the car and I thought, oh no. But the real big thing for me was the traction control. Like, just kept cutting in all the while. So I thought, oh, this is a disaster. I mean, I to the point where I thought, I'm not going to enjoy this car now. Like, there was a point where I thought, I'm not going to do the nice roads. I'm literally just going to go to Monaco via the motorway. Because this car's a pile of poo. So anyway, I've not defeated myself. I've persevered. I've gone into the menus because I know that M cars in general, sometimes they do need some buttons pressing. Even on previous M cars, they do need some buttons pressing. So I've gone in, I've turned everything up. I've turned everything off. Basically all the traction control, backed it all off. It's a different car.
Yeah, came alive.
It was like literally... no traction interference. I turned it all off.
you would hope at that point it stays away.
Car firmed up, steering was better. I don't, in general, I don't like the, you know, when, I don't know where they do it, must be hydraulic. No, it's electric, isn't it? The steering goes really heavy on them when you turn them up.
Turn up to Sport Plus.
Yeah. I don't necessarily like that because how would you say it? It's like an aesthetic feel.
Yeah, it's a fake feeling. It doesn't feel genuine.
It's not a genuine feel. Yeah. So I actually backed that back a bit to try and get a bit more feeling on the road. But it was mega, mate. It was like proper. The things that I noticed about it when I really started to push on the back. Was light, like I could really feel the back floating. It's a heavy car as well, so the brakes are good. At no point did I get any fade or nothing. I mean, I wasn't 10 temps, you know,
I wasn't my girlfriend,
but I was brisk, fast enough, you know, so fast enough to feel the weight of the car and the general, like, little flaws, essentially. So my big take from it was at higher speeds, definitely at track speeds, if you definitely, I'd like to go on a track on it, but I know what it's going to do now. it would be too light at the back. It's got no downforce at all. People say, oh, modern cars. It's got no downforce. And it notices. And the front end. As the turning is good on it to a certain extent. Because it's a big, heavy car, you then really... It does push on a bit. But you can stop that a bit by trail braking. But then when you really start to push at that point, you're then relying on the tyres and suspension more. And that window's very small because it's just got PS4s on, essentially. And then you need semi-6 at that point, and then you need to do something with the suspension. So, but it was good enough, like... For a road car.
For an estate car.
For an estate car. Like, I'm being really critical because I'm, like, comparing it to, like, full-on...
Pistas and GT3s and things that you've taken to that road before.
Literally. And yeah. People, like... And until you drive both cars, you really... I mean, as good as the M3 is, the proper supercars, they're night and day... to the way they perform compared to a normal, like an M3 is a properly fast car in general. But when you get in a proper GT car or proper Ferrari or proper Lambo, it's like another level and more, and you really do notice it, you know.
Well, so, as they should be, and it all starts with weight, right? It all starts with
it's
weight.
It's always then, weight, yeah, yeah. In my opinion.
And then everything from beyond that. But yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. So yeah, I obviously had the experience in the new M2, and our trip sort of basically crossed over. I was just heading home in the M2 as you were setting off in the M3.
Yeah.
And we both have waxed lyrical about M3 touring. I've spent less time in it than you have now, but big fan, was super excited to hear how you got on with the trip. I kind of assumed that you would get to the Twisties and be like, oh yeah, you know, it's a bit heavy. So when you sent me that note being like, oh, I don't like this car out here, I wasn't surprised at all. I was like,
you did say, I told you so.
I knew it.
But what did surprise me is how similar your complaints were with some of my complaints about the M2.
Yeah.
So you had that M2 come and stop, but you kind of, it went straight out.
No,
so
I
you
didn't
hadn't
drive
really,
it,
you,
yeah.
You literally drove it back from the dealer to your showroom.
Yeah.
I ended up doing, well, God, maybe 700 odd miles in the M2 over the week. I took it up to Alexander's Prestige. Quick interruption.
Oh.
Behind the Glass Live UK, those of you that have bought tickets for the 3rd of December event at Alexander's Prestige, I'm afraid that event has been delayed by a week to Sunday the 10th of December. Now, given that it's so far away and the time of year, I'm really hoping that is not going to make a major difference to lots of you.
Mm-hmm.
Just to clarify, it's been delayed a week from the 3rd of December to the 10th. If you can no longer attend the event, please email btg@seenthroughglass.com. That's btg@seenthroughglass.com. If you can no longer attend the event. However, all of your tickets are still valid. So they're literally just transferring the date from the 3rd to the 10th. I'll put that all over Instagram and stuff as well, and you'll be receiving an email. Anyway, so yes, I took the car up to Alexander's Prestige, then I stayed a little bit further north, this insane Airbnb. Well, it's not Airbnb, but we'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. And then I went to the North Pennines and blah, blah, blah. So
nice.
I did a lot of miles in the car, and I really liked it, mate.
Yeah.
Like, I went into that week thinking, I'm not actually that fussed. Like, I don't know, M2 is obviously their behind the glass flagship car. But I've never, like, lusted after one. I think I'm maybe more of an M3 guy.
Fair.
Especially of the new generation. So I wasn't that fast and, you know, whatever. Got into it and almost immediately I was like, oh, I quite like this. Oh, this is nice.
You had a manual, right?
I had a manual. I liked the way it looked. It was very nice on the motorway. Again, you said something very interesting there about the ride. Because when I borrowed the M3 Touring and with the M2, there's a firmness to the ride that is reassuringly sporty. Like, you know that the car is capable, turn it up to sport plus. Actually, I found in the UK the M2 was a bit too brittle, but somehow in its normal setting it's almost McLaren, like how it can dial it right back, like, you know, can be very livable with.
Yeah,
there are other cars that aren't nearly as sporty but are way firmer, I think, than the most recent M generation.
I agree. So
M2 in its normal state was very nice. Just really enjoyed living with it. But, on the day when I went to do some proper driving, I found the weight started to raise its hand a little bit. I had the exact same thing of just going through a few corners, not thinking that I was going too fast. Like, it felt on entry, like, this is going to be great. It was all hooking up, the front end bites in. I was like, oh, lovely. And I just start pushing through the corner. I'm like, oh, I'm in the other lane now.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. I had a very squishy brake pedal. Not brakes, but brake pedal, which I didn't like.
Long.
Yeah, long. Just a bit, you know, once you really get into it, it felt all right. But I just didn't like the feel of the pedal.
Okay. I didn't get that.
Yeah, you were happy with your brakes.
Yeah.
But the traction control thing, I couldn't believe.
Yeah.
So the first road I did of fun had two switchbacks. So I immediately turned traction control off.
Oh, right.
So literally, I got there and I Sport Plus traction off because I was like, here we go, let's just see what happens. So then I did this first road. I was like, this car is absolutely unbelievable. Then I stopped and I turned everything off and I was doing all my shots, got back in the car and then set off and just put it in sport. And mate, like, bumps in the road were cutting power. Like, not even coming out of corners. Like, anything that just unsettled the rear end, which again, also felt a little bit light and squirrely, because that's rear wheel drive compared to your X drive. Just bogs down.
Yeah.
And I said in my video, it felt like a 2005 Ferrari traction control system.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
really
odd.
Bizarrely intrusive.
Yeah.
Which, as you say, the benefit is you can dial it all back, right? And what's great about new M products is you get those M1 and M2 buttons so you can get in, you can have the car set up. You know, I like to drive with everything off. So push the button, done.
Yeah.
But if you're in that scenario where you don't expect to be, I don't know, like, do you always want to be 10-10s? Like, is it a bad thing? Is it just because we didn't realize? Or is it bad? A bit like with the Giulia Quadrifoglio. Remember when that, I think they changed it, but when you had to get the exhaust valves open, you had to put it in race.
Turn it all the way off.
Turn everything off.
Yeah.
Which was terrifying.
Yeah.
So it's annoying that there doesn't seem to be a middle ground. Because I did try. You know, it's got that variable traction control.
Yeah.
You can step it back bit by bit.
Yeah, yeah. A bit like some of the Mercs, yeah.
And I think naught is off and nine is, you know,
safe. Yeah.
I only found that two or three, it was less. Even at six or seven, it's pretty intrusive.
Yeah. So I didn't, obviously, because I just turned it all off because I had an X-Drive car as well. And at that point, there was no interference at all. The car, like, apart from it being light, there was no point where the car was moving about, as in moved about a little bit under braking. Another thing that I forgot to mention about the M3 as well. Again, I'm really nitpicking. The gearbox was a tiny, tiny bit too slow.
Very interesting.
Yeah, because it's I'm comparing it to, you know, the Ferrari and the Porsches where they're simultaneous. But, you know,
that's ridiculous.
No, because I'm on them same roads and they were my references. Yeah. So, but it was fine. It was absolutely fine. But I would have, me myself personally, I would have liked the gears straight away, all the while.
So this is interesting because this is the one point that I didn't want to bring up, but I will now because you're going to just gloat so much and it's going to kill me.
What are you going to say?
The biggest thing I didn't get on with the M2 was the manual gearbox.
It's too fast for the car.
No, it's not that it's too fast because I'm a proper driver, Tony.
Okay.
Give me a manual 599 GTO. What a car.
Okay.
I really didn't like the feel.
Okay.
Felt very cheap and sort of notchy. And because of the gearing, basically it felt happiest in third gear. Whenever I went to second, it just felt a bit unnecessary. Or if I was in fourth, I was like, oh, I want to come back down to third. And I just didn't enjoy the play or the movement. And then there was a lot of me thinking, well, they do offer this car as stand, like it's a paid for option now, the
it
manual.
Is now, yeah. Most, a lot of manufacturers do that now.
Is that BMW being like, don't get the manual? Like, I can't decide whether that's them being a genius and going, everyone's going to want a manual, so let's just charge for it and make more money.
Yeah.
Or they've gone, we don't, like, this car shouldn't be a manual, so just get the DCT.
Yeah, I mean, without being derogatory to BMW, BMW don't make the best manual gearboxes anymore. you know, the ZF box. I believe it is a ZF, the 8-speed box now. It's a very, very good box.
Is that what they've got? They've got a ZF?
I'm sure they're ZF boxes, yeah. I'm not 100%.
Let's have a little Google. Correct me. Yeah, but yeah, let's have a Google before we get ruined in the
conversation. They normally are ZFs in them, and they're amazing now. They're not double clutch, they're torque converters, right?
ZF, well done,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah, so anyway, they're great gearboxes, ZF boxes in general. Especially for normal road cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like I say, the thing that always does me about a manual, whenever I drive a manual quickly, you only ever use two gears. But when you drive an auto, you use way more of the power band in the engine because you're in more than two gears. Like you just said, I was only ever in third or fourth in the M. Whereas if it had been the auto car, you'd have been in second, you'd have been in fifth. And it's the same with the GT3s, mate, because you've got one gear less. You're only... You know, when you're pushing on your GT3, you're probably only using two or three gears. Well, I use all of mine, apart from probably seventh.
Yeah, fair enough.
On a fast car. I'm talking about a fast car, mm-hmm. which is why I always prefer automatic gearboxes, because you just use loads more of the range of the engine, whereas you do when you're going fast in a manual. It's the last thing you want to do, keep changing gear.
Different engagement. I disagree. I enjoy the movement of changing gear. I just didn't like that gearbox, the feel, the throw, the placement of the gear knob. And I just sort of thought, and I'm not going to say it definitively until I've driven an automatic M2.
Yeah.
But I just sort of thought, and given my experience in the M3, I was like, yeah, I don't drive the M3 Touring going, I wish I had a manual here.
No.
And I'm very happy in that car.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem comes down for the M2. So my conclusion was that car is a way more grown up and serious car now. It feels like a baby M4.
It's a proper car.
It's a proper car. Yeah. Previously, it was always, it felt like it was alongside an RS3 or an A45. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Where now it really feels like a proper sports coupe.
Yeah.
But has it moved too close to the M4?
I still think the M4, and by the way, you can't get the M4 in a manual in the UK either. You can only get it in an
auto. No, but let's assume you're not paying for the optional extra and you're just getting the standard automatic M2 up against, in the UK, you can't even get a standard M4. You have to get the M4 competition.
Mm.
I don't, what is the, let's look at the exact price difference. The one thing I didn't do in my video. BMW M4 competition UK price.
It's, do you want to guess? 10 or 15 grand. Yeah, it'd be 10 or 15 grand.
Well, do you want to guess what the list price is currently of an M4 comp?
An M4 comp. Is it like 77, 78 grand?
It's gone up to 80.
Has it really?
Yeah. Where the starting price for the M2 is
64.
So there, it's theoretically 15 grand. Yeah. And that will apply as you spec up. Because
correct.
M4s don't necessarily come better spec'd than an M2. You could probably get more options, wouldn't you, on an M4?
Come with a lot more packs than M4. So you can have an ultimate pack, which gives you basically everything. Or you can have individual packs, whereas the M2, you can really only have two packs, okay. really. You have the comfort pack and the racetrack packs, which gives you the seats and the carbon roof.
So for the 15, let's assume it's 15 grand more, and I haven't got my Magnitude Finance calculator up to tell you the monthlies, but I don't know. There's just a part of me that was like, I like the smaller, I can't call it a small package of the M2 because it's a big car nowadays.
Weight's the same though, similar. Well,
very similar. Power is almost identical.
And 30 horsepower.
And therefore, and same torque. Same torque as the non-competition cars, so the competition. Yep. Anyway, but I don't know. I'm just like, have they missed something by making it almost too close?
And the thing is, like, I think with a lot of these modern cars now, especially when you're comparing them to, unless, because these cars now, they're...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So good, these modern cars. Mm-hmm. There's so many different menus and so many different ways you can drive them. Like we've always said, and the M3 definitely comes in this bracket. It is three or four cars in one.
M3 Touring, 1,000,000%, but also the saloon. But
yeah, the saloon as well.
Yeah.
Apart from having the big boot, the M3 saloon is just as good. It's absolutely no different.
I saw one yesterday. I have to say, I was like, hello.
Yeah, they're
what a car.
Proper cars. And the thing is, because they are so good now, even in normal mode, for most people, it's more than fast enough, and it looks after you as well. So I think probably if you're comparing the M2 to the M4, there will be differences. But I think the everyday man on the street's not necessarily going to notice the differences, because I only think you probably notice when you're really pushing on, you know? Because they will be different, by the way. They won't be the same.
I think the smart choice is the M2, because
if you want an M4,
yes. If you want, well, hey, look at us thinking. We're so in sync these days. If you're looking at an M4, save the 15 grand, get the M2, spec to the tits,
yeah.
And you've got a smaller, slightly sportier package with pretty much the same offering. However, maybe the pick of the bunch is actually the M3.
Yeah,
because that gets you four proper seats, still a cool look. A little bit more perform. Like, I think it would be worth the.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah.
And then the touring you have to class differently. But I don't know. I really, really enjoyed my week with that M2. I really liked it. I'm sorry, I'm going to come out and say it. I love the way it looks. I was sad to see it go. I had this one thing. So on one of the days, I had to drive a couple of hours south for a meeting kind of near Manchester-ish. That dragged on. We ended up having some dinner and I drove back at night. And there's something about a car at night, like a new car at night, got in, all the headlights were amazing, and the infotainment system in those BMWs is super nice. I had the music on loud, I had cruise control, but then I had like 10 miles of twisties when I got off the motorway. I was just like, this is a wicked little, this is just cool. It made me feel,
And there's something, there is something special about a BMW M car, by the way, as in, I never know whether it's chassis or it's just because you know that you're in a BMW M car. Mm. And they've always managed to do it, BMW, right, you know, all the way down the years back to the E36 and the E46. They've always got something just really a bit like a GT product, Porsche. They've just got something special about them, essentially. Over and above like an AMG car or an RS Audi product car, you know, they just drive that little bit better than them two.
It's so funny because I hated that last generation M3 M4. I despised it. I made videos about how much I hated it. This change, this new era, I'm so here for. As so many diehard BMW fans step away from that brand, I am like diving in with two feet.
But I don't think they are, mate. I mean, the fact that they've got a little bit heavier, but everything's getting heavier now. You know?
But like, people don't like the design. People don't like the weight. People say they're not proper driver's cars anymore. The fact that they're more accessible, they're more comfy, they're fake sounds. Like, I'm talking about the real purists.
Yeah.
I think there is, from that audience, and negativity. I think from the general public and people like me that don't know what I'm talking about, I think they're becoming more appealing. And I prefer them over Audi and Merc at the moment, 1,000,000%.
So BMW doing their job then, because they don't care about the odd nutcase like us that is really neat. It's for the
sorry,
match.
Joe Achilles. Yeah. We love you, Joe. We love you, Joe. But that's a fair point. I wonder deep down what Joe thinks about BMW now, because I think cut him and he bleeds for, well, we bleed Ferrari or Porsche.
Yeah.
That's the BMW guy. But yeah. I don't know. Anyway, all in all, we both had good experiences, right?
Yeah, I still honestly stand by the fact that the M3 Touring is the best all-round car.
Do you want to keep it? Are you tempted
I am.
It?
At the moment, I am. I mean, it's done 4,000 miles now, I mean, I'm in it.
You've lost whatever margin that was left.
Yeah, it's long gone. Yeah, long gone.
Well, my new daily turned up.
Mm-hmm.
F-Pace SVR has arrived.
Oh, yeah.
Got the big reveal video coming live on Sunday, which
can
is
you tell
also...
us anything now or not really?
I will a little bit. Right. So remember we did the garage update just before our summer break and I had it all planned out.
Yeah.
Oh, lost my head since then.
It's gone again.
Lost my head. I'll talk about it on Sunday in the main channel video.
Can I tell ladies and gentlemen what you sent me the other day?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. So this happens this happens less now, ladies and gentlemen, to what it used to.
But this is quite serious, this one. So I'm quite nervous for letting you do this because I'm really on this, but go on.
Yeah. So Sam is I'm not going to tell what car you're looking
for. You can. Yeah, you can tell. You can tell.
Okay.
Can tell.
So Sam is looking to replace the 360s.
No. That's not what's happening. Hold on. He's taking artistic liberty. My conversation was, this is the car I want.
Right.
How could I go about it? And one avenue was, well, I could.
Correct.
Swap the 360 for it whilst I look for a Challenge Stradale. That was the... Because there's no Stradales on the market right now. No. It wasn't like, all right, I'm selling the 360. This is what I'm getting.
No.
So be careful.
Okay, fine.
Don't.
I need to be a bit more artistic instead of just going
flat. No, you were artistic. You just like added all these narratives and left out some details. As I say, so the premise was no Stradales on the market. Why don't I do this whilst I wait for the Stradale?
Find the perfect car. Okay. So he sends me something completely left field.
It's not that left field.
Well, it's really left field compared to a mid-engine supercar, a GT4 Lusso.
A GTC4 Lusso, the V12. Stunning spec, though.
Yeah, I agree. It was silver with tan.
Silver with tan.
Yeah.
V12 car, still in a warranty, still good. Warranty period from a approved dealer.
Yeah.
They give you 2 years warranty. Sorry, still in the maintenance pack.
That's important.
Yeah, not many miles. I just loved it. I was like, what a car. Like, 180 grand, I think.
Yeah.
V12 Ferrari.
A lot of money still.
4 seats, room for the baby.
Yeah. And there's quite a lot of 4 seats cars you can buy.
But
for
I just,
a,
I was like,
less than 180
I was like,
grand.
I could sell the 360 to finally make the move up to the Stradale because next year's 10 years of seen through glass, it makes sense. But there's no Stradales on the market and I want a very specific car. So even when they start bleeding onto the market, it's going to take a while.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, just as a hashtag life experience, why not get rid of the 360, jump into a Lusso ultimate family car, run that whilst it still has the maintenance pack and the beautiful 2 year warranty that Ferrari are going to give me. And that gives me basically 2 years to find a Stradale. Hopefully it's going to take a lot less than that.
Yeah.
Find the Stradale, sell the Lusso.
Yeah.
Bish, bash, bosh, winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Which is perfect in an ideal world, but you already have just got an ultimate family car. I mean, literally 15 seconds ago, you go, oh, I'm going to release my new F-Type or whatever, F-Pace or whatever it is. I mean, what's wrong with that?
That's a temporary fix, isn't it? That's from Jag. That's the temporary car.
So when's
the Lusso? To like get the Project 8.
When's the Lusso coming then? Now, you have two of the same.
Yeah, and I got a quote on the Lusso, and it's a lot of money.
Of course, everything's a lot of money now, but...
Do you want to know the breakdown?
Tell me.
So, 180 grand car.
Yeah.
40 grand in.
Decent deposit.
1,900 quid a month.
Way too much money. You get
too much money, mate. Yeah. I was hoping it was going to be 13.
Was that 1,400 quid a month? Deal?
That was a four-year deal.
So was that a Ferrari quote? Or
Ferrari finance, so yeah. I haven't spoken to Magnitude yet.
Final balloon, 100 grand just under?
Yeah, 90 exactly. Grand? No, 100 grand, 104 grand final balloon.
Yeah, fair.
And 10 point something percent APR. Fair. So Magnitude will be slightly better because I think they can get me down sometimes to around 8-ish.
But the residual's
going to be the same.
Good.
The residual's, oh, well, you say this. Am I revealing too much? Screw it, who cares? Come at me, Ferrari. Ferrari did admit their balloons aren't as stupendous as they used to be. They're pretty good.
I think it's car dependent as well, by the way.
Maybe. He was just like, look, I'm going to be honest with you. Definitely do like, you know, shop. We're going to give you our best quote 100%, but it's worth going out because the way the market is at the moment, it's worth going and shopping around. Yeah. And I would hope Magnitude could maybe save a little bit off that, but they're not going to get me down to 1,300 quid a month.
No.
So I'm trying to do some man math to still make that loose make sense, but it made less sense when it was 1900 quid a month.
I bet it did.
But yeah, long story short, and it's still going to become clear on Sunday, my head is scrambled. A friend of mine has gone and bought a Porsche 356. Remember that car, which I test drove in Portugal, which I fell in love with, and said I want to buy one as my first classic, and thought, well, that'd be cool. Anyway, I'm all over the shop, but that will all become clear. In the meantime, this F-Pace SVR has turned up. So the F-Type's gone. X3's gone. Is that listed with you yet?
Well, it's online. Yeah, it needs a little bit of TLC.
TLC.
Which is all booked in next week, but it is up and for sale.
Vicky drives with blinkers
eyes
on.
Sharp.
Yeah, something like that. that will be available, at Gravelwood imminently. Okay, so this is all I'm going to say for now.
It's a great car, that.
I miss that car.
Yeah.
So all I'm going to say for now.
Yeah. You know, I know diesels are going a little bit out of fashion now, and they are. I have genuinely seen it, especially over this last 9-10 months this year, that people really are moving away from diesels. But there are certain cars, and I still say it about Range Rovers, that really do benefit from a nice linear powered diesel. And that's because of the torque. And your X3 is one of them, mate. It literally just glides down the road.
I miss that car, mate. I miss that car. You know, you don't know how good something is until it's gone. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I already knew how good it was, and now it's gone.
Yeah. And there's not the diesel ones. Like I said, everyone buys the petrol.
F40i.
Which is, again, it's another amazing car. But what you can't get away from the diesel is that the torque is literally just effortless.
Yeah, literally just there's endless torque and close to 40 mpg.
Yeah.
What a winner. You were sort of low 20s, really. Yeah. But look, I've literally had the F-Pace SVR for 2 weeks or 10 days now, I think. Took it down to Devon for a couple of days, been potting around in it. I think my immediate reaction is a bit like I've said a million times over, where does one need, or where does, when I'm this spoiled, a super SUV? That's been my immediate reaction, but we'll wait and see. I do love the F-Pace SVR. It's just as a daily.
Mm.
I'm now using it as a daily for the first time ever. It was always a bit of a luxury for me before. Yeah. And now I'm like living with it, and I'm like, boom.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see.
There was one major elephant in the room that we forgot to mention about the M cars.
Oh, what?
The fuel.
Oh, God, yes.
The fuel tanks.
Well, it must have been worse for you than it was for me.
Yeah. I mean, 55 litres. 55-litre tank. Disaster.
That is it. Because you're just always filling up.
Yeah.
So even though they do all right MPG, you just feel like you're living at a petrol station.
Yeah, so I was doing like mid-20s, especially on the motorway, but I'm, you know, cruising at 80, 90 mile an hour, France, the speed limit's a little bit more. And I was getting probably just about 300 miles to a tank. Yeah, like mid-20s. But
that's less than my 360.
It's annoying.
I can average, you know, if I'm on a long trip, I know I've got about 350 miles in the tank.
Yeah,
it's a bore when you're doing a long journey.
I mean, your 360 is going to be a lot more to fill up, by the way.
It's like a 100-litre tank.
But what I'm saying
is it's just all I'm equating it to is how often you have to stop.
Me too.
Because you say, like, the MPG is all right, the tank, so money-wise, it's all
right.
It's
no different, yeah.
Yeah, but I just don't want to have to be stopping every 2 seconds. You know, with that M2, over a two-day period, I've filled up, like, 5 times.
The thing is, like, I don't understand it with the M2, but I really don't understand it with the M3, because in the name, it says touring.
Yeah.
Well, you're not touring anywhere because it don't do any miles to the tank.
Don't want
to
get stuck in that somewhere. My God.
No.
Well, to continue on the conversation and move away from the BMWs, even though we would love to keep going on about that, one part of my garage update headache is that, obviously, and I've spoken about quite a lot, I think I still want a little electric car.
Yeah.
And especially now that the F-Pace has arrived, I've kind of realized, look, this is not the day. This is a great daily for me. Smoking around an F-Pace SVR, I'm very happy.
This is really spiteful to fuel.
But as the family car,
yeah,
that's where I'm like, maybe we need a little bit of help. Also, because on a day like today, I'm in the GT3, because if I bought the F-Pace, Vicky's stuck.
Yeah.
Vicky and the baby are stuck. So Vicky and the baby need a little run around, or I need a little electric car to bring to the studio, leave them with the F-Pace. So I went and drove that new Abarth electric.
Oh, yeah. You keep going on about that thing.
Oh. Well, because visually and conceptually, I was already excited. I'm like, man, is it right on my street? Like,
you spent 30 your grand on a bath before. So
40. Which is kind of interesting because it's the same price for the electric one.
And that was, by the way, that was probably 6 years ago.
The record edition.
Yes.
The yellow record edition was probably 6 years ago. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a car though.
Sold that car twice.
I mean, mate, that is a collectible. I should never go. There'll be 100 grand at some point.
Don't be so silly.
No, but that is probably the best Abarth, modern Abarth made.
Right.
That you don't care, do you?
No.
So no. I can tell when you respond like that, you just don't, you're like, I'm not going to give you nothing.
It's like a glaze.
Yeah, yeah. I can't even eke out anything on that. So let's go back to the electric car.
Yeah.
We both have been fans of the idea of the Fiat 500 electric. Best looking little city electric, 150 odd miles, kind of made sense. We saw loads of them in Monaco. We're like, wonderful, lovely.
Makes perfect sense in the city.
Exactly. Yeah. Abarth came along. I'm like, great. Looks like madness. I love the idea of it. A few slightly gimmicky things on it that we were all like, oh, is this speaker under the car? And
yeah,
like
yeah.
Anyway, went off to drive it in the Cotswolds. I think in the flesh, it looks even cooler. The colours are the bomb. They've nailed that. Like these lime greens and these pastel blues and a red. Like they've really done well with thinking about, right, electric cars pretty much all drive the same. So how can we give this an identity?
That's what they've got to do.
And what is an Abarth identity? Yeah. And I think they've captured it well in terms of adding to the looks and then the colour palette. Again, the sort of slightly questionable things come in. There's like a rock theme tune that happens when you start up. So when you turn on the ignition, it goes,
what?
it's so grim. I don't know if you can deactivate it. I kind of hope you could, because no one wants that in their life. Like there are some cars, you know, there are some cars that just bong in an annoying way. You know, when you start up and they go, om.
Yeah.
Or, bing.
Yeah.
I think Audi do it with the RS and they are.
Yeah, yeah, it makes a noise. Yeah.
Ba-dum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is like, it's like that. What was that Lynx thing?
Status quo in the boot.
Yeah, honestly. But really nice place to sit, which obviously is essentially the Fiat 500 electric.
Yeah.
It's a really nice little glass sunroof. The dashboard is big, like big old screen. Like just nice place to sit.
Nice and modern.
Fire it up and then the speaker starts.
Stupid.
Well, ish. So you won't remember, but I drove this electric Porsche from Everati a couple of years ago. No. They took a 964 or a 993 and took out the combustion engine and put in an electric powertrain. And that had a similar speaker-like device.
Okay.
And that one was good, but it didn't quite correlate to the throttle pedal as well, because it was a development car that I drove.
Right.
This is much better because it really does. Well, your right foot does interact with the speaker.
Right,
so you can rev it as you accelerate. Like, obviously, there's no gear changes, which is kind of missing, but it does. It doesn't just drone. It's not just there going.
Okay, fine. Not
there
like
is like
a Renault Zoe that just goes.
I wasn't aware that's what a Renault Zoe did, but yeah, no, it is. Yeah, I appreciated it.
Okay.
And when you're pushing on, it's nice to have some kind of soundtrack. Obviously, you can turn it off. I couldn't work out how, but you can turn it off. And yeah, it added to that character and personality. Now, initially, I didn't think it felt that fast. You know, electric cars are all about instant torque and rapid, and this is an Abarth, and you know, combustion engine Abarth's always a bit leery. You know, wants to launch off the line. You know.
Yeah, but a petrol one's not that fast. But what it does is it's just the way it delivers its power.
Yeah.
An electric will just be like a burst of power, then it goes away.
Yes, arguably. But there was just something a bit initially disappointing about it.
Right.
Initially, I was like, oh, I like everything about this, but I don't feel that Abarth-y about it.
Just get the normal one.
Yeah.
That, I was like, I said about a year ago when it came out. Just get the normal one and save yourself 10 grand.
But then.
Oh, here we go.
But
he's
then.
He's going to get me.
So I did a whole thing, a whole spiel.
Yeah.
Oh, guys, I feel disappointed. I was chatting to everyone. Oh, and then I was like, right, well, I'm just going to blat back to the hotel where the launch was. And I blatted back at full pace.
Full chat. Mate.
It came alive. It is a hooligan mobile. If you really get on it, it is actually hilarious.
Right.
Not in necessary, like, in a bit of a, like, kind of way. Like, I don't know if it's actually good or, like, really fun to be driving something that small and that talky good. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I understand you.
I definitely came away from the day going, oh, I really like that. I really like that.
Okay.
And there's something to be in town in. It's got way more zhuzh.
Yeah.
Let's face it, how often are you taking your electric Abarth to a country lane to like go flat out? But it did reassure me that I could do that.
Well, you better hope it's a local country lane because you ain't getting home if it ain't.
Yeah, I think flat out I probably did 120 miles on the for the range, something like that. But you know, it's not what it's aimed to do. So
no.
That is my leading contender, or that was my leading contender, until I got into the pricing. So as I say, like close to 40 grand cash price. Ridiculously expensive to lease or finance. Like, we're talking like 700 quid a month.
Yeah, way too much money.
And when you look at that in comparison to so many other electric cars you can now get for 500 or used ones for 400, it's very hard to justify.
I agree. Yeah, yeah.
So
it's a problem, mate.
I don't know how I feel about it because I kind of want one. I think Schmieder's got one as a long-term loan. Bastard. But I kind of really want one and I really like it. I think it would be perfect for what I need to bop around to the studio here, to go on little missions, to just have in and around home. But I don't think I can justify the price.
But I think it's...
I could get a Taycan for 700 quid a month.
You probably could.
I could. I know I could.
You have a bigger deposit though.
Potentially, but I got a Porsche, so.
Yeah, that's right. But that's the trade-off, you know. Like with the little Abarth, you have a lot smaller deposit than you would with the Taycan. But that's another thing. But the point I'd like to come back to is the for what you're going to use it for. Just blatting around here. What's wrong with the normal one?
The Fiat 500, because it doesn't have the same personality. They have captured that very well.
But you just said the only way you get the personality is when you're going flat out.
No, not at all. The fun from driving flat out. The benefit is the colours, the change of the looks, the speaker system,
yeah.
The vibe is there. That's what they've done so well.
Right.
You walk up to it and it feels exciting and Abarth-y and blah, blah, blah. But if you actually want Abarth driving pleasure... That only comes through flat out.
But you're fair, I understand. But then for them little pleasures that you've just said,
mm-hmm.
just to make you feel a little bit better.
Please.
You're paying another £200 or £300 a month more.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the problem, mate.
Sure.
That's the trade-off.
I'm with you. And I don't think the trade-off was so big when it came to the combustion engine Abarth.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
And because the price difference for a start is not as long either. It's not as big. And they're different money from new. Mm. They're 20 odd grand, and when they're used, they're 10 or 15.
And I think if you've got
a riot, them cars.
1,000,000%, I know that. But if you got an electric Fiat and wrapped it in a cool colour and put some slightly better wheels on it, which is hard to do with an electric car, I think that's your winner.
Yeah.
I think the Abarth electric feels a little, they just messed up the pricing somehow, because otherwise I would hands down have, it's cool.
Yeah.
As a little electric car, it's one of the coolest hot hatches there.
But there's a lot of electric cars in the market that are cool.
But not in the hot hatch territory. We're still waiting for that. Well, all the Honda stuff is big. The Peugeot, I wouldn't call a hot hatch. The Mini, I wouldn't call a hot hatch.
No.
The Fiat is a hatchback, but not a hot hatch. The Honda E, not. So there's not much... sporty, and I know I've just said that you don't really get the sporty driving until you're really flat, but sportiness or hot hatch vibes, I don't think is necessarily all about driving. You want to be able to capture something in it the rest of the time.
Yeah. And actually, do you know what? The electric thing, when I was talking to my daughter the other day, she's nearly 7, all she goes on about is, Daddy, when I get bigger, I want a turquoise Fiat 500.
Oh, look at that girl.
And she wants electric.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's already being installed into
good
the
on,
kits
yeah,
now
yeah, perfect.
To have electric.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's all she talks about.
She can
about.
Buy my used Abarth. Yeah, no, I'm on a bit of a hunt at the minute, so I'd love to get some feedback. Those of you out there running, I think I'm going to say small electric cars. I don't want an SUV. I mean, the dream is still a Taycan. Obviously, the dream is a Taycan. I just don't think I can justify a Taycan because I don't need. I want one anyway. So let's say small electric cars. So Honda E's, Peugeot E208, Mini Electrics, Fiat 500 E's. What else is in that category? You know, that kind of ilk. If you're running those cars, please let me know in the comment section below and how you're getting on and how you're finding it. And Cupra, Born, that's a bit bigger. ID3, they're a bit bigger, but still, that kind of thing. A hatchbacky electric car.
Cupra's supposed to be quite good.
Cupra's supposed to be great, I've heard. Cupra's, I think it looks the bomb. I really like that, actually. But yeah, the Ioniq 5 and 6 are too big for my liking.
What car to have for you?
What?
Get that new little MG thing.
Yeah, my neighbour's got one. It is really good.
That's a fast old thing.
What about the X one? The thing is, I don't love the way they look.
All right.
Do you know what I mean? I don't love the way they look. Because everyone says the Peugeot is the best one. And I've been working with Peugeot a lot this year. No, to drive like as a little hot city hot hatch. Apparently the Peugeot is the best one. And I've been working with Peugeot loads this year. But I don't love the look of the 208.
Yeah,
I really like the 308 and the 508. The 208 just doesn't do a lot for me. Yeah. If I'm buying my first electric car, I kind of want to get one that I want, not one just because of how it works.
You know what else I noticed when I was in France as we were talking about French cars?
Go on.
Everyone in France got a French car.
Very proud, aren't they?
They're very proud. They literally got Peugeot, Citroen, Renault. Every single car is French.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that. It's good. You see lots of Alpines.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very proud.
Yeah, Fair play.
I think Americans and French,
very loyal.
Maybe Japanese, are the most loyal to their own manufacturers.
I agree, yeah.
We'll see when we get down to Australia. How many Holdens?
Will there be?
Lesser, because I think they've all gone. They don't exist anymore, do they?
Oh.
But you can see, for your Utes. Get some Utes. Get behind the wheel of some Utes,
yes,
maybe.
Please.
Oh, God. We've got some exciting plans, actually. So hopefully you would have heard at the start of the episode, we firmed up our plans for the Australian tour, which is going to correlate in a load of Australian episodes, live show episodes, but also hopefully one or two normal episodes talking about our experience in Australia. We're going to be doing some road tripping, test driving some cars, visiting some people. So it should be a good old experience.
We've got a lot on, haven't we?
Are there any, I don't think you're going to know, but are there any Australian cars or any like iconic Australian things that you'd like to do in Australia?
Be nice to give it the big and on the off, on you know, when they're in the outback and stuff in something leery.
Yeah, you'd like to go and do some red dirt driving.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Noted. I'll try and make that happen.
In a pickup.
In a ute.
In someone's back garden, basically.
We need like a grenadier.
Yep.
Yeah. That'd be good. Before that, though, we've got a trip to the Alps, don't we?
Very soon.
Austrian Alps.
Yeah, very soon. Looking forward to that.
End of September, Tony
taking
and I
the Porsches.
Are taking the GT3s on a bit of a trip down to the Pirelli P0 experience. At the Österreichring. It's not called the Österreichring anymore. Is it called Red Bull Ring?
Red Bull Ring, yeah.
God, yeah. That's a bit of a throwback. So that'll be mega. So yeah, we've got some exciting stuff coming up. It's going to be a pretty hectic second half of the year. So make sure you're subscribed now to this YouTube channel. Turn on notifications so you don't miss out on any future episodes. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. We've got our first live event this weekend at Podium Place in Newbury. So next week's episode will be our first BTG Live of
the year.
All sold out. Hopefully Australia will be the same. We'll be doing some Rate My Rides and having a bit of chat about other bits and bobs going on in life. In the meantime, if you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. You can also follow me at Seen Through Glass, including my new subscription offering on Instagram, offering some more behind the scenes and live updates over on Instagram now, so go check that out. Otherwise, yeah, we'll be back with you for our live event from Newbury next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flimsy staying slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ArmOdillo. armadillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.